Today on Doomed! 1 week after I promised you all that I would never talk about Russiagate again, at least until the Mueller report comes out, the Mueller report goes ahead and comes out, and I'm forced to keep my promise and not talk about the Mueller report on the day it comes out. But that's fine. I prefer that because, frankly, I'm sick and tired of talking about Russia, and Donald Trump. Because even better than all that are my two guests for you today. We're going to be talking about the 2020 presidential campaign, and we're going to be talking with two young activists who went from Beto O'Rourke to Bernie Sanders. Now, you guys all know me. That's right up my alley. That's what I like to hear. Ditching Beto for Bernie. And let me pull them up right now. They are joining us right this very second. There they are. Bryant Young and Autumn Lanning, they are the hosts of Burn the System. They are former Beto O'Rourke activists, but not anymore. Bryant, Autumn, thank you so much for joining me today. Love that you guys are on the show. And Autumn, if you could just scooch on over just a little bit. We can't see you. You're right off the... Perfect. Love it. No problem. Hold on. Your volume was down. Let's try that again. Thank you for joining us, guys.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right. Now, so let's get right into this. So I was reading an article in the Texas Tribune. And the article is pretty much a profile of you guys as two former Beto O'Rourke staffers who now support Bernie Sanders. Now, can you tell me what the two of you did for Beto O'Rourke?
Yeah, so as student staffers, we essentially did a lot of the groundwork. So we were on campus, organizing the campus, and as official staffers, we did do volunteer trainings and things like that. But the focus of our work was organizing, so we did phone banks, you know, hosting canvassing events, a lot of tabling on campus, block walks around campus, and things of that nature.
Now, you guys did this for his Senate campaign, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Right. And I think that what's happening here, and you guys became, tell me how you guys, first of all, before I get any further into that, geez, I'm ready to jump right in. Before we go any further, how did you guys, or what led you guys from actually working on the Beto O'Rourke campaign? You guys were paid staffers, correct?
Right, yes.
How did you guys go from supporting Beto to supporting Bernie? Now, I get that a senatorial campaign is different than a presidential campaign, and we could get into that. But still, I think, you know, if you're putting your time and effort into a guy, you would pretty much probably be behind him for more than just one campaign. But that's not what happened. So tell me about how that happened. And each of you have a different reason, please. One at a time.
You can go first.
Well, basically, we took a deeper look at some of his voting records and some of the things that he had cast his vote on that were just unacceptable to us, I think, as progressives. I think that a lot of the time that we were working on the campaign, we didn't really think to kind of go deeper into that sort of thing. But once we did, we realized that he wasn't as progressive as we would have liked him to be.
Yeah. So for me, I'll give a little bit of a deeper dive here into, you know, when this kind of happened. It was directly following the election. There were a lot of progressive podcasts, YouTube channels, specifically, I think Secular Talk came out with a video regarding his tweet about AIPAC. And this was a while back, but it hadn't surfaced until after the election. And so he tweeted just like basically fawning praise for AIPAC, which is a huge red flag for progressives, as AIPAC is sort of at the forefront of the Israel lobby, which is a sort of a hot topic for progressives. But that kicked, you know, sort of the deeper dive into his voting record into high gear then. So then we start looking at, well, he's the second largest recipient of fossil fuel money in the country, which is another red flag. And then you look back at his voting record, well, he voted to continue drilling in the Gulf and voted to lift the 40-year oil export ban. So all of these things just start to add up. And again, it was just that we hadn't done our diligence really on his voting record prior. And then one thing led to another and just sort of snowballed, and his voting record The more you look into it, the worse it gets, honestly, in terms of just being a more centrist, moderate, anti-progressive platform and record.
Right, right. And when you guys, what was it about Beto that, let's go back now. What was it about Beto that sort of appealed to you guys to begin with, to have you sort of, I guess, jump in and actually do the work, hit the streets?
Well, for one, the idea that someone in Texas could take Ted Cruz's seat, that was kind of the first thing. I was like, oh, okay, cool. This guy is, you know, the real deal. He also has this kind of, like, charisma and, like, motivational, like, energy to him that we definitely felt at all of the rallies. He's very good at, like, moving a crowd without ever actually pinpointing an exact policy that he stands for. It's kind of, like, almost a deceptive and inherently damaging charisma.
Right. He says a lot in terms of the words that are coming out of his mouth, but them actually meaning anything, I mean...
Right.
Yeah.
It's a lot of, I don't know, word vomit, I guess? I don't know how to... Exactly how to... It's a talent for sure, let's put it that way.
Oh, yeah.
To be able to say a lot, but also say nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what was it about Bernie Sanders that appeals to the two of you? Now, before we get into that, actually... How old are the both of you?
We're both 18 years old, both right. Freshmen in college.
All right, so you guys are young. You guys are freshmen in college. Jeez. Oh, man, now I'm feeling old. So you guys aren't even millennials. You're the YouTube generation.
No.
You're
yes.
Generation Z. I think they're calling
Gen Z.
You guys both. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think actually that's an interesting dynamic because a lot of – when Bernie ran in 2016 – I'm 32, by the way. When Bernie ran in 2016, his whole, you know, his major base, the thing that sort of helped him catch fire, was that he had an enormous amount of young people behind him. In mm-hmm. fact, before the 2016 primary against Hillary Clinton was even over, he had already become the most popular young people candidate since they've been tracking this stuff in modern history. He had... got literally blew past Obama's previous record of young people voting for him in the primary. He had more young people voting for him in the primary than Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton combined. So mm-hmm. it's interesting to me to see that, you know, the young generation now, I mean, millennials are still young, but the youngest generation now are, from what I've seen, and I mean, I can't judge it by just the two of you, but you guys aren't the only anecdotal evidence I'm pulling here. It seems like, and you guys can tell me actually from your experience talking to people yeah. your own age, it seems like he's going to be the most popular young person candidate once again.
Oh, I would completely agree with that. I mean, I think even for supporters of Beto in 2018, the energy was very progressive, and it may have just been directed towards a more centrist candidate. And that happens... still, so people are just not aware that because Beto is so effective at conveying his message in a deceiving kind of way, that Bernie is far more progressive. But I would agree that the sentiment among young people is incredibly progressive. And that's just, I think, a product of people looking around, being really pissed off at what they see going on in the country right now, and just believing fundamentally that the basic human dignities of all people should be protected. So I would definitely agree with that. That's you know, the sentiment among young people for sure.
Yeah, and I definitely think that young people can kind of like sense out now when someone means what they say. Like we know exactly what Bernie stands for. We know exactly if and when he gets elected, what he will fight for. He's very clear about his policy, very clear about his platform, and people like that.
Now I want to get more into that in a second, but I just thought of this actually from something you guys said. Do you guys regret doing, you know, working for Beto for a senatorial campaign?
No.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay. Because my point here sort of is that, you know, Beto actually, I thought, was a, you know, obviously in a primary, if he was primaried by someone on the, there was a primary between Beto and someone on the left.
Zimmerman.
Right. Did you guys support, who was it again? I'm sorry.
It was Seema Hernandez, and she is running again as well against Cornyn in 2020.
And she definitely has our full support now.
Did you guys support her to begin with when
So in the primary, honestly, I don't know. I can't speak for Autumn, but I wasn't as tuned in to the Senate race at the time, honestly.
Yeah, I wasn't aware at the time.
Right. So I think, you know, in my opinion, I would vote for, I would support the most left candidate in a senatorial race. But if Beto won, and like we saw against Ted Cruz, clearly you support Beto over Ted Cruz.
Yeah, I mean, sure.
And that's what you guys did. It's the obvious thing. And you do whatever you can to support Beto to defeat Cruz. And that's sort of, I think that's sort of, and again, like you said, Beto was very charismatic. He was a good candidate. And I think people took Beto, the senatorial candidate, the guy running against Ted Cruz. And I think they're putting him in a spot where he's not at on a larger national scale.
Mm-hmm.
He raised all this money. I personally think because he was facing Ted Cruz, and it was the 2018 midterm, the first major sort of election since Donald Trump became president. I don't think, and I actually fully supported Beto jumping in and running against Cornyn. I think he is honestly not too smart to not run against Cornyn because he would win.
I agree.
I honestly think he would beat him because I think there's a different dynamic there between him and Cruz. And you guys are from Texas, obviously, so you guys would know better than me. And do you agree with that assessment?
I would agree, yeah, that it definitely is a different dynamic, different, you know, kinds of name recognition there for sure after Beto sort of exploded onto the scene. I don't know that it would be locked up or anything, but I think he'd have a shot, and I think he'd have a better shot than he did even against Cruz.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Especially with more time for people, and it's going to be the same time as Donald Trump's, you know, the presidential election, and
oh yeah,
you know, I think it's going to bring more people out, and I think Beto had a shot, but he thinks, you know, being that he was such a popular candidate for Senate, he's going to translate to a good outing for a presidential run, and I think, you know, what you guys have seen and are doing by just switching who you support. And I guess, you know, technically, I don't even know if you'd call it switching. It's a completely different election. But I think it is something very noteworthy because, you know, and someone in the YouTube live stream when we started said, you know, not to be a jerk, but I don't see why this is such a big deal. I'm sure a lot of people backed Beto for Senate, but are going to support someone else for president. And, you know, I think if we're talking some high level staffer, I think that would get some sort of, you know, headline in terms of, oh, this former high-level Beto staffer moved over to Bernie. But I actually think you guys, being like the on-the-ground staffers, you guys are young, I think you guys actually are a bigger deal in my view because I think you portray the larger electorate here.
Agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I would definitely agree with that, that it's not really about, you know, Autumn and myself being former staffers, and it's not like it's some scandal or something that there's two former workers for Beto that are moving over to Bernie. It's just indicative of this larger shift and where the energy really should be directed. The progressive energy from the progressive youth should be directed in the primary. So it's indicative of a larger you know, trend and where the momentum is going to be going rather than just, you know, two staffers.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And because, you know, who cares if one, you know, if Beto's campaign manager or whatever jumped to Bernie. Yeah. I mean, it's a big deal headline-wise. I get it. It's news for sure. But I think if you guys have made the switch and you guys were on the ground talking with people, talking with probably interacted with more, you know, more people who make up the Democratic base than even those high-level staffers, I think what you guys are doing portrays on a larger scale what's going to happen here. I think people are obsessed with Beto and Mayor Pete. I can never say his last name, so yeah. I just like to refer
Moody
to him.
Judge. Yeah.
Yeah, right. I think I've on this show I've been calling him Mayor Butthead. But yeah, I know, very, very, very mature of me. But you know, I think they're young, and people think, oh, they're young, so young people are going to flock to them. And I think, you know, I'm going to let you guys say it, but I'm calling bullshit on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. I think that young people aren't so much concerned with how old or how youthful or how hip the candidate for presidency looks. I think we're more concerned about the policy that is affecting our day-to-day lives and the lives of our fellow Americans.
Now, how is it looking to you guys? You know, your demographic in your where you live, Texas. From, you know, I mean, it's still early, obviously, but this whole thing has started earlier than usual. So I think more people are actually paying attention earlier than usual. So I do think it's not completely out of bounds to actually say that what we're seeing now is going to at least reflect somewhat where things are going to be, at least when the primary actually starts next February. Well, not, you know, in February 2020. So what are you guys seeing among your demographic, A, and then B, among just how it's looking in Texas?
Yeah, amongst, again, I'd have to say the same thing about just young people generally here in Texas, that we are very progressive. Personally, I surround myself with a lot of really, really progressive young activists, and that's really inspiring and really empowering. And that's honestly the reason that we created the channel, was to ensure that because we know just how progressive young people are, you know, Gen Z, college students, specifically here in Austin, just how progressive those people are, we don't want them supporting the less progressive candidates. So it's just about redirecting all of that incredibly progressive energy towards the truly progressive candidate, you know, with truly progressive, you know, a platform. So, and I don't know what, if you would agree with that sentiment.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think that there's a lot of youth energy, and I think that people maybe are upset about what's going on and want to see change. And so, like you're saying, we created this channel to kind of identify the issues and how exactly they can be changed. And like, there's all this energy for Bernie Sanders, like I was saying before, because his policy is clear and also consistent throughout his entire life.
Now, are you guys already active with the Bernie Sanders campaign, or are you just supporting him as unaffiliated activists?
Yeah, so we're organizing for Students for Bernie here on campus at UT Austin and other colleges in the area. The organizing kickoff is next Saturday, the 27th, and so that's, I guess, when it's going to officially start. But we are organizing for Students for Bernie right now, yeah.
And tell me a little bit more about Burn the System.
Yeah, so again, we started this platform because we want to empower young people. I honestly wholly believe in the potential of young people to take the mantle and lead our political revolution. And we know that it's necessary right now that we fundamentally change the structure of our economy and make it work for everyone again and not just the 1%. And I believe that it's not only is it not only are we capable of leading this revolution, but it's incumbent upon us in a lot of ways to take up the mantle and for young people to lead the revolution. So that's why I made the channel, to spread the word, empower young activists, give a lot of young people an outlet, you know, direct them to causes and advocacy groups, whatever it may be, just to channel that outrage into productive change and people contributing to progress and, you know, in a good way.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause people are mad. They're upset about the way the system is working, and whatever we can do to help, whatever we can do to point out, direct people in the direction that they can go to actually help and to actually start fixing our completely broken democracy, I think is something that we need to do, that everyone needs to do.
Oh, without a doubt. I think it's great that, you know, I hate to harp on your ages, but I think it's great that at 18 years old, you know, you guys are really jumping in there and doing this. You know, there was a, you know, when I was a freshman in college, oh my God, I sound like an old man. Look at me. Christ. When I was a freshman in college, George Bush was president.
Yeah.
And I remember the anti-war movement was really strong then. And, you know, I was like you guys in a different way. You know, it wasn't so much organizing for, you know, organizing to in a way to get a progressive activist, progressive leftist movement in power. It was literally a movement to just stop the wars started by the Bush administration.
Yeah.
And what sort of happened is George Bush no longer was president. Obama became president, and the grassroots energy on the left just sort of died out. It was sort of sad to see that people, you know, and not everyone felt this way, but I guess that just the momentum behind it just died down, because I think a lot of people, a lot of liberals, a lot of progressives, probably just felt like everything was going to be good now that Democrat was in charge. And, you know, Obama did a lot of good things, but he also didn't do a lot of good things either. And I think, you know, what one thing that really bugs me is that when people bring up how, you know, when Trump says he fixed the economy, and the answer to that is, no, Obama fixed the economy. Well, no, not even that either. Obama may have saved the country from a recession, but he didn't fix the economy. What happened is the rich just got richer, and the working class and the poor and the people in poverty just got poorer, and the people who had jobs had to work double jobs, two jobs, or they lost their job and had to, you know, and they're not considered unemployed because they're currently driving an Uber, and when they're not driving an Uber, they're renting out their apartment on Airbnb, and when they're not doing that, they're running around doing a DoorDash or whatever the delivery services are, and the gig economy became a thing that basically kept people unemployed but underpaid. And I think what we're seeing now with young people becoming active, it's not just, you know, I guess there is the whole, I mean, there's literally a movement based on the idea that we are resisting Trump. But beyond that, I think there's a more important movement of young people not just resisting, but actually taking the next step and making sure that actual leftists hold the reins of power next time around, and that they call the shots next time. It's not just stopping something, it's creating and starting something and making sure that thing that's created and started is there to stay.
Yeah, and I definitely agree.
You know, I sort of think, you know, when I see what's happened since Trump, it's been again, I'm not someone who is happy Trump is president or voted third party. I mean, you guys, I don't know how you guys vote. Well, geez, in 2016, you guys couldn't vote. Holy shit. Oh my God. Oh Christ. I'm ready to hang up on you guys. I'm so angry. I voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016 after supporting Bernie in the primary because I thought it was important that Trump did not win. But being that Trump won, you know, we should make lemons out of lemonade and take advantage of that. And I think the left has. I think more people are opening up to leftism and democratic socialism and full-on socialism in a positive manner because Trump became president. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys are seeing that in Texas. You know, I would guess yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. I was reading the other day too about just the surges in DSA membership too, after Trump took office. But definitely here in Texas as well, like I said, it's just people who are pissed off and know that we need to fundamentally transform a system in which, it's rigged in favor of the wealthy and the corporate establishment. And he's more of the same in that sense. He's loaded his cabinet with, you know, Goldman Sachs CEOs and banking executives, Wall Street executives. So he's more of the same, and people are pissed off, and so they're going, to the real left of corporate centrism and fighting for real reform.
Because, like, the same is not working. It's all these centrist politicians, all these people who are bought by corporations, like you're saying, the influence of dark money, it's not working, and we need a completely new system, and that's where Bernie comes in, and this whole leftist progressive movement.
Right, right. So, you know, I just keep thinking in my head, like, when I was 18, it was no more war. And now I'm talking to you guys, and it's literally smash capitalism. The system isn't working. It's time for a socialist revolution. And I'm like, yes, let's do this. But so I would love to hear what you guys think of some of the other 2020 candidates. So let's just throw some names out there and see where you guys stand and how you guys feel about them.
Yeah.
So let's go a little bit more into Beto first, actually. So you guys laid out some great reasons to not, you know, longer support Beto. But what was the one thing where, like, you found this about Beto and it was like, I supported him. I wish he beat Cruz, but we've got better options now that I know this one thing that's just totally turned me off.
Yeah, well, it might be different for both of us, but I'll go first. So for me, it was the fossil fuel issue. So he violated his promise to not take money from fossil fuel executives, and he's the number two recipient from fossil fuel executives in the country. And so when you look back at his voting record, that shows there too. Again, I laid out that he voted to lift this 40-year oil export ban. He voted to continue drilling in the Gulf. you know, here in Texas, and that's such a huge issue because of the suffocating grip that the fossil fuel industry has on the Texas economy. So knowing that, I know that once he gets to, you know, the national stage and he has DC executives, he has Wall Street executives, Sachs executives that are knocking on his door, you know, I think he's going to bend on, you know, to them as well. So that was it for me, was knowing that he takes so much money from the fossil fuel industry, from executives in fossil fuel and oil and gas.
Yeah, so I would say that, but also he does not support Medicare for All. And, like, he hasn't, like, for one, he hasn't outright said, you know, I support Medicare for All, which is an absolute necessity, a universal single-payer system, because obviously the system we have now is not working and people are literally dying over this. And he also had votes. I believe it was he voted to, it was when Medicare was being passed, and he voted against regulations on the industry, basically right. feeding straight into big pharma corporate interests, basically effectively allowing for price gauging and just jacking up the prices of like insulin and other life-saving medicines that people need to be able to afford, but they cannot and are literally dying. And that's one of the big issues for me.
If I'm thinking of the same vote that you're talking about, Autumn, I think actually the reason he can't even excuse himself from that, because I'm pretty sure he actually bucked his own party on that and even voted in a way that even other Texas Democrats didn't vote.
Yeah. I think other House Democrats were actually in support of the bill, and he just, yeah.
Yeah, so he voted to, there was an independent advisory board that was tasked with lowering Medicare costs under the ACA, and he just voted to abolish it because Republicans were fear-mongering about death panels, essentially.
Which was completely not true.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Right, it's yeah. straight up out of the Republican Party playbook. Right.
Yeah.
So now if Beto O'Rourke came up to you guys and said, like, you know, he tried to win you back and he gave you a rousing speech. Let me spitball here. The ideas of change are blowing in the wind. And am I sounding like Beto? Am I sounding a little bit like Beto?
Pretty much. Yeah.
You got to get the arms in there.
Right. So let's throw out another name. Kamala Harris.
No. Her record as attorney general is
horrific.
Yeah. Sort of perpetuating the war on drugs. She still, to me, this is the most shocking one, doesn't support body cams on police officers.
Which is really, yeah, that one.
Which
is
someone who, you know, plays to identity politics and wants to, you know, fight for racial justice rhetorically. That just doesn't hold up. So, right. No on Kamala.
What about Elizabeth Warren?
I actually sort of depart with a lot of people in the Bernie camp in that I actually do support Elizabeth Warren. So there's a lot of people who hold this grudge against Elizabeth Warren for not supporting Bernie in the 2016 primary. But I think that, you know, Liz Warren is a necessary voice to have, just railing against the financial institutions so consistently and so substantively. So, I like Elizabeth Warren a lot.
Yeah, she definitely works very hard in her Senate position, too, just for passing her, progressive policies.
Oh, yeah, her role in the Senate with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has just been instrumental. So in terms of taking on the financial institutions, taking on Wall Street. I like Liz Warren a lot.
Right. Policy-wise, actually, I know we're still far out, but she has been delivering literally policy after completely drawn out specific policy since she started running. I think actually she's even been better than Bernie on this, even though I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter, because I think he is more of my ideals and beliefs line up with him. Yeah. Literally, it's probably just a few minor, well, not all minor. For example, I think Elizabeth Warren was sort of wishy-washy on how hard she would fight for Medicare for All recently.
Agree. Yeah.
But she's easily my second choice. She's always been, I've always been a fan of her. She's been fantastic in the Senate. She's great when, you know, in her role when she's taking down the big bank CEOs right to their face, literally.
Oh yeah.
It's fantastic to watch, and she's been on top of this, and it's really a shame to me actually that just her campaign has not yet really taken off. and that fundraising-wise, at least for the major candidates, she's been on the bottom of the list. And yeah. I think she's recently lost a few staffers because of her you know, she's not fundraising from big funders, which is great, but of those people who aren't doing it, she's not making up enough of it from small donations. So it's actually sort of detrimental to her campaign. And, you know, it's a shame because she is my second choice. I would easily vote for her if Bernie Sanders did not make it or dropped out or didn't get as far as she did. And mm-hmm. she's my second choice, just easily.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me, actually, that you said how a lot of Bernie supporters don't support her, because I'm familiar with those Bernie supporters online, but from my experience, they're such a small... I think a poll recently saw that like something like 76% or 74%, something like 3/4 of Bernie Sanders supporters would vote for Elizabeth Warren easily, hands down, if yeah. it was between her and Trump. And I think those numbers reflect pretty much, you know, if you look at how many Hillary Clinton primary supporters voted for McCain over Obama in 2008, I think the number is like 25% or something. The number of Bernie supporters who voted for Trump or didn't vote at all, I believe, over voting for Hillary in 2016 was something like 20%. So, you know, people make a big deal about these numbers, but I think actually what it's more so telling us is that somewhere between 70 and 80% of someone's primary voters are actual the sure thing Democrats, and we shouldn't be counting on that other percentage. Like, I don't know why people act like those 20 to 25% who don't vote for the eventual nominee are the outlier, like some sort of outlier. No, don't count them. They're not the Democratic base. I don't know if you guys follow, but but so my experience though is that that's not a major part of the majority of Bernie supporters, but you guys are saying that you have seen differently?
I think that this is, like, I don't think it's really quite indicative of, like, a large amount of Bernie supporters that actually do feel that way. I think that Bernie Sanders is just overall a better candidate for a presidency than Elizabeth Warren. I think that people see that. But I think that, yeah, like, going after her for that is kind of like a weak argument, I think, against her.
I've just seen people, especially on the Medicare for All issue, who are just – they're just not completely satisfied with what she's said about it, sort of seeming wishy-washy, and that whether she would fight wholeheartedly for that. And so I guess that's the sentiment. Again, some people just honestly hold a grudge and feel like that yeah. she might have lost in the Massachusetts primary. I'm not really in that camp, but, and I don't know about, you know, like, the aggregate numbers of how many, like, totals of, whatever percentage of people would actually vote for her over, you know, Tulsi, for example, right. or other candidates. But, I think generally people would support her and are happy with her rhetoric against Wall Street and the financial institution stuff.
You brought up Tulsi Gabbard. What are you guys, yes. what are your feelings on her?
I like Tulsi, and I also will depart with a lot of leftists here when I say that I don't like Tulsi as much as I like Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But I do think she is a necessary voice to have on the debate stage. I think that kind of strong rhetoric is something that Bernie lacks against regime change wars, against U.S. imperialism. And I think that's something that we need to push Bernie to the left on, especially on the Israel issue. And I think Tulsi could contribute in pushing him to the left on foreign policy, on U.S. foreign policy. So definitely a good voice to have, for sure.
Right. I mean, I support having all these guys on the debate stage. I think having all these candidates on the debate stage will, you know, I think even someone like an Andrew Yang with his universal yes. basic income will be interesting to see on the stage and see what mm-hmm. others have to say about that. But, you know, Tulsi, my issue with her is that I don't think she's been very consistent. I don't think she's always been this, you know, she's been good on foreign policy. I don't think she's always been this anti-war voice. I mean, I think she's shown she hasn't been consistent on this. I also think that her support for Modi in India and her
huge concern.
Right. And her sort of sketchiness on Syria. I'm not as anti-Tulsi as some people are, but I'm also not as pro-Tulsi as some people are. I think that I would not want her to be president, but I do think she would be a decent ally, knowing that there are these footnotes to have about her where we shouldn't really put her on this pedestal and have her be the loudest voice in the room. There's some ideas we should take from her, but other than that, she's just a good ally, but I wouldn't go any further. I wouldn't want her as president. Let's keep her in the house.
Yeah, I fully agree with that.
Yeah.
Agree. I'm not so quick either to jump on the Assad sympathizer train. When I know that's sort of an attack that people have been throwing at her, but the Modi issue is a seriously concerning one, and that she's, I think she said herself that she was quote-unquote hawkish on drone strikes.
Yeah, which that's a red flag.
is a huge issue as well.
Right. I think you'll find with a lot of people, and I think Bernie has been bad on this as well with drones.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They think the whole thing that people have a problem with concerning drones, I mean, the reason they like drones, because they think people, the problem people have with war is our troops, our American soldiers. And obviously I don't want those people to anything to happen to those people. They should be home with their families. I don't want them to die. They should be, it's sad that a lot of them feel like the only way they have a chance to make a living and be able to provide health care and housing for their families to join the army and get an education is to join the army. I think that's horrible. But I also don't want the people overseas, brown people and black people in the Middle East and Africa, to die either. That's another reason I'm anti-war. And to them, the drone strikes takes out the American troop casualty aspect of it all. But they don't think about the other side of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that, like, the whole idea of drone strikes as being beneficial to the real issue about war is like slapping a Band-Aid on a gaping wound. Like, you can't solve the issues of our troops being overseas by just sending in these drones to try to attack the enemy, when in fact it actually targets civilians way more often. There's too much quote-unquote collateral damage, I think, is the phrase that politicians like to use. But no, we need to end foreign intervention and U.S. regime changes and things like that. And that's how we solve the issue of bringing our troops home, rather than sending in drone strikes that kill other innocent people.
Right. So what do you guys think of, I brought him up before, Andrew Yang?
I was a supporter early on. I think him bringing up UBI is important. I think we need to have a conversation about it. And, you know, I don't know whether or not it's a viable policy right now, but definitely needs to be in the discussion when we have automation at the rate that it is, you know, happening. But there are some things that concern me. I saw recently that he did an interview with Jimmy Dore, and Jimmy pushed him on whether he would break up Amazon. And he sort of just said, well, no, I don't think that's the best way forward. And so he talks about the concentration of wealth and sort of the consolidation of industries as being an issue. But then when he's pushed on it, you know, whether he would break these, you know, huge profitable conglomerates up, he's like, well, you know, I think there might be another way forward. So that's concerning. Also, that he doesn't support raising the minimum wage, supposedly because UBI would cover it. But I'm like a little skeptical of that, honestly, that we not having a $15 minimum wage. So,
yeah, he's I think he has, you know, a few good ideas on alone, like just cut those ideas out of his policy. And those ideas by themselves are decent and I think will add to the debate. I do think UBI, I have some concerns about it, but I do think I agree with you completely that with automation, there is going to be a need at some point for the government to provide basic necessities. And I think the way we think about jobs and how jobs provide for us will soon be out of date. It's not that far off, certainly within your lifetime. But at the same time, I mean, like you said, he's a tech bro. When it comes down to it, he's a tech bro. He's a venture capitalist tech bro. And I assume his very important policy on circumcision isn't what the young people care about today.
Yeah.
Let's throw out one more name here, I guess. Another young guy. I mentioned him earlier as well. Mayor Pete.
Yes.
he's got the momentum right now. In fact, I mean, it was a big deal when Beto jumped in. The Beto versus Bernie battle. Who's going to raise what? Beto, actually, I got to say, he's blown it. What has he been doing? Who's been strategizing for Beto?
He dropped.
I mean, you guys probably know who's been strategizing for Beto. They dropped the ball. No one's talking about Beto anymore. Mayor Pete, the new flavor of the week.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just another centrist, though, just like Beto. He is not prepared or equipped to bring the real progressive leftist change that America needs. So.
He started out sort of co-opting the progressive rhetoric and then...
kind of fell from that, yeah.
And then once when he's pushed on it, he's wishy-washy. But the two kickers for me are, one, Israel, extremely pro-Israel, and at a time where, you know, 80% of Palestinians in the West Bank are completely reliant on humanitarian aid. It's when Israel is running effectively an apartheid state, oppressing millions in the West Bank and Gaza. It's just not the right stance. So Israel is a big one. And I read an article today about his policies as mayor of South Bend in relation to gentrification of some of the more affluent neighborhoods.
Right.
Or lower income neighborhoods that he sort of knocked down, I think it was like 100,000 houses in 100 days or something like that, that he you know, knocked down and replaced with just like these affluent neighborhoods and displaced, you know, thousands of low income people and gentrified these neighborhoods. So that's mm-hmm. a huge issue too, that, you know, he was taking money from some of these realtors and executives that were profiting off of, you know, the changes in these neighborhoods. So that's pretty concerning too, but just generally centrist. Yeah.
Yeah. And if his policies are reflecting the wants and priorities of his donors, and that's automatically a huge red flag for us, because we want a politician that's going to work for the people and not for corporate interests and people with the most money.
Right. I mean, as someone in the chat's pointing out, I mean, the guy went from graduating from Harvard to joining the military. Now, who knows the thought process behind that, but I've also seen a lot of people say, like, it's almost like this guy, from the moment he was able to think about these things, he's been preparing himself to do all the things necessary to be the sort of perfect sort of traditional candidate.
Yep.
It's a bizarre sort of turn to take, all these different moves in throughout his career. For me, the first thing I saw that immediately wrote him off for me was that he had said he was troubled by Obama commuting Chelsea Manning's sentence.
Yes.
And
saw that today as well.
I saw that today.
that one I saw actually like almost like 2 months ago, and I saw that.
Really?
And I was like, I immediately was like, I mean, listen, this guy was in the military. I get it. For military people, I don't agree with it. But I get their thought process behind it. They were in the military. They have certain sensitivities to what Chelsea Manning did. But at the same time, I think there's a point where even with that background, your humanity kicks in. Just even your common sense as just an intelligent person kicks in and says, all right, listen, Chelsea Manning didn't get away with anything. She spent 7 years in prison, and not like 7 years chilling and running around in the courts. No, she was in solitary confinement for like a huge portion of her imprisonment. She was literally, the UN looked into her treatment and said it was the equivalent to her being tortured.
Definitely.
And for you to see that and not think, okay, this person has certainly been punished enough. They've paid whatever price I, as a military person, think they should have paid for doing this. I mean, if you can't get there, then I don't think you should be the president of the United States, because it shows me that you have no sort of, I don't know what the word is, no sort of empathy, I guess.
Yeah.
It's troublesome to me.
Mm-hmm. If we can't hold our government responsible for war crimes, for acts of war crimes, because that's what was going on in Iraq and Afghanistan. That was like what she exposed. And if there's a presidential candidate like Pete who isn't going to support us holding our government accountable, then that's really concerning for him to be the commander-in-chief of our military in our foreign wars and things like that.
Well, the really frustrating thing, too, is that he said in that interview that he is happy that the information is out, but that just she needed to go through the proper channels. Well, she tried to go through the proper channels.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But
yeah. And so how is it going to get out then if it's not a whistleblower, right? We have a system that is so broken that it forces people to be whistleblowers. So I don't get that. You're right. That's a huge issue as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not sure how much more time you guys have here, but to just pivot a little bit to before we go, I'm actually interested. I'm going to break my promise to my listeners to never talk about, or at least not talk about Russiagate for at least a week. I'm already ruining that promise. But I'm interested, actually, as young activists, what your views on the whole Russiagate situation, the Mueller investigation, Trump-Russia collusion. I'm interested in what Autumn and Bryant's opinion about all that is, as two 18-year-olds who are extremely active in politics.
Mm-hmm. A huge diversion and a huge waste of 2 years of just media constant coverage, almost like criminal how obsessed the media was over this. While he is, you know, in the pocket of foreign governments, it's just mm-hmm. it's clearly not Russia. His policies towards Russia mm-hmm. have been, you know, escalating, right? They've yeah. been very aggressive. But if mm-hmm. you look at Saudi Arabia or, you know, Israel, he's taken hundreds of thousands of dollars through his hotels from Saudi princes and the policies has overlooked Khashoggi. He just vetoed the resolution a couple days ago to end the genocide that Saudi Arabia is carrying out in Yemen. Mm-hmm. So if you want to look at him being in the pocket of foreign governments, you want to look at emoluments, you could look at Saudi Arabia and have a conversation about that. You would get him there because he is a criminal. But it's just a huge diversion to be fear-mongering over Putin and then, in effect, pushing him towards escalating with Russia when you have so much attention on the left of people saying that he is in the pocket of Putin. Then now you're pushing his administration towards escalating more with Russia and effectively starting another Cold War. So, yeah, huge diversion, almost to the point where it's criminal, honestly.
Now, you're speaking to the media coverage of it, and I completely yeah. agree. But do you think that the investigation in and of itself, just to, because I think, yeah. you know, do you think that was also pointless? Because I do think, listen, I am a Russiagate, I guess I could still consider myself that, being that the Mueller, even if with the Mueller report out, I am a Russiagate skeptic, but not to the extent of some of the more vocal names, I guess, who are out there yeah. Sort of patting themselves in the back for getting, for them perceiving that they got it completely right. They actually mm-hmm. didn't get it completely right, and we know yeah. that even more so today. My opinion was always this, that the media is blowing it out of proportion. The media also is blowing the social media aspect of it specifically out of proportion. However, yeah. there was enough evidence to me that it did seem like there was some sort of collusion, and I don't think it was collusion whereas Trump and Putin were hanging out, giving high fives, you know, being best friends. I think it was sort of a unwritten or an unspoken, they're helping me out, so I'll sort of let them do this. And it went both ways. I also think there was enough of that for this investigation to be legitimate. I think there should have been. And I think what we got out of it is actually, I think we found out a lot. I think the media is what blew it out of proportion and pushed so hard that, you know, Trump was going to be found, like, coordinating with Putin, and he was going to be sort of like a puppet to Putin, and that there was going to be some sort of evidence directly connecting them to the point where Mueller himself was going to say there was collusion and Trump should be impeached. Again, they didn't find this stuff, but they also didn't find evidence that this stuff didn't happen. So do you think that, you know, I don't think you guys think that it's completely pointless, or do you?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it makes sense that they would want to investigate into things like that. But I do think it was, like, dragged on for a very long time and it was blown out of proportion. There's a lot of media coverage. Like Bryant was saying, I think that the more important thing to focus on is, like, Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's pointless because there were a lot of important indictments that came of the investigation. But just when it drags on for 2 years and they get a couple Facebook trolls or whatever, I won't say it's pointless. But I do think there is more elsewhere, and I'm glad the indictments that did happen, you know, did. But I just think that the criminal activity is elsewhere, and it shouldn't have been blown out of proportion as it was.
Right. And so I guess we can leave it with sort of what the future, I guess, just your thoughts on what the future sort of holds, I guess, for, well, I guess being that you guys are in Texas and everyone's saying how, and I sort of am not as sorry if this is my opinion, but I don't think Texas is as close to becoming a purple state as people think. But
I completely agree.
I do think it will get there. And what are, I guess, some upcoming names? I guess you already named the person who's going to be taking on. I'm sorry, Hernandez is her name, right?
Seema Hernandez. She's taking on John Cornyn's seat.
Right. So I guess who are some other names? Or if you want to talk more about Seema Hernandez, actually, that'd be perfect. Then we could, I guess, end it on this note of an optimistic look at the future of progressives in Texas.
I can talk a little bit about Seema. You can give your input as well if you have something to say too. So Seema is a really progressive candidate. She did run in the primary in 2018 against Beto O'Rourke, far to the left of Beto. And what's so appealing about her is we've seen all these, you know, devastating petroleum fires and things in like the Houston area and in Texas recently that have just demonstrated that, hey, we need to take action now. I know the UN report also showed that we have 12 years to do something drastic to address climate change. And so she's standing up to the fossil fuel companies here in Texas, which is a huge deal because it's such a tough thing to do because it puts you at such a financial disadvantage. So she's very, very progressive, someone who I think that there is going to be a lot of grassroots energy behind. And I'd have to agree with your sentiment, too, about Texas not being as close to purple as people would have concluded from 2018. But I do think the way to go is economic populism. So talking to communities as Bernie Sanders does and saying, hey, I don't care. You know, I care about lifting all working people up, fighting for all working people, doing away with these terrible trade deals. So that sort of platform of populism, I think, is the way forward. And that's one that progressives have. I don't think a center-left candidate can win statewide in Texas, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But Seema Hernandez, definitely very progressive, if you have something to say.
Yeah, I definitely agree with all of that. Yeah, like he was saying, she's a very progressive candidate. I don't know if Texas has seen a candidate as progressive as her, like, in a long time, at least to my knowledge. She supports, like, Medicare for All and end to foreign intervention. Basically everything on the progressive checklist that you could want. And she wants to fight for the people. And that's something that's very good.
All right, Brian and Autumn. Well, let me say your full names. I don't know. Brian Young and Autumn Lanning. Why don't you guys tell us where we could find more about Burn the System and where we could follow you two?
Absolutely. So Burn the System on YouTube. That's Burn with an E, of course, because we're feeling the burn. Also Burn the System, same name on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Podcasts, wherever you get podcasts. And you can follow me on Twitter at The Young Burner, also with an E.
Yeah, and my Twitter is at WatercolorSky, SKYE.
Perfect. Guys, it was a pleasure talking to you two. I look forward to hearing from you guys even more in the future.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yes. Take care.
You too.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the second half of the show. But first, I see people want me to talk more about the Russia, the Mueller report, and I'm going to be doing that, actually. In the members' half. That was just, I really just wanted to get a gauge on how young people are viewing this. And, you know, my thing here was not to say that it's such a big deal that someone who would support one candidate's senatorial run and then supporting another candidate for president when that other guy is also running for president. I don't think that's such a big deal, but the media has been framing it as Beto was a great senatorial candidate. He raised all this money. So obviously that'll translate over to the presidential run. And I think nothing spits in the face of that more than two former on-the-ground Beto staffers, young people also who are a specific demographic, people are saying Beto's going to easily win over, spitting in the face of that. Like I just said, it's just the perfect, these two young kids, are really the perfect embodiment of that all being wrong. And that's really I think that's really the point of them coming out and talking to that, speaking to that. So I'm going to speak more about the Mueller report in the second part of the show. If you're watching on the YouTube channel, you can stick around. But first, folks, please support this show at patreon.com/mattbinder. Could really use your support. We have been a little bit stagnant on the Patreon end of things. I get it. It's all good. But if you can afford to help out, I would, again, as 2020 is ramping up, I'd like to do more content. I'm thinking of doing I mentioned it briefly a couple of weeks ago. I'm thinking of doing a newsletter. I'm thinking of doing an additional live stream or multiple additional live streams. I'm also contemplating making the weekly Doomed episode a little bit shorter and cutting up the time we have here now into like two, maybe, so I can do two shows until we get more Patreon subscribers to possibly have me do multiple regular size shows. Because there's a lot of times during the week, something happens on a Monday, I want to talk about it, and have a guest talking about something else on the Thursday or the Friday. And then by the time it's time to talk, I want to talk about that issue that happened on the Monday, 20 other new things just happened. So it just gets lost. You know, a lot of things are going on, folks. And again, can't do it without your support. If you are a Patreon subscriber, thank you. Love you. If you could afford to continue subscribing, please do so. Love you again. And those people will get that shout out, that very specific shout out right now. Here are the people who make this show possible. Abigail T, Adam Q, Alan B, Andrew H, Benji A, Bobby M, Brooke H, Champagne Communist, Chi, Christine H, Colin R, Dank Uger, Dave K, David HZ, Dragon Slayer, Dum Da Dum Dum, Floaties, Fraz K, Francis Z, FTW All Day, Greg D, Ian, Curtis J, Jameson Test, Janelle A, Jasmine Hope S, Jeff K, Jonathan B, Jordan V, Joseph R, Josh C, Katie S, Kyle, Max W, User Me, Michael J, Michael M, Mr. Danks, Nicole A, Namde Net, Omid M, Romina O, Sina, Struggle Session, which reminds me to reach out to them and get them on the show, TM, Tamni G, Thaddeus A, Tina M, Tom G, Tom M, Trine E, Will P, and Zarin. Again, if we could double those numbers, we'd be in a really good spot in terms of extra content, doing all the extra shit I want to do. It wouldn't be perfect. It wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't be at a point where I could do this and just do this, obviously. But we'd be at a point where it would be like, I can do a whole new show every week and or do multiple small shows, shorter shows a week, and we're growing. We're doing good. So again, patreon.com/mattbinder. Also, support this show by leaving a review on iTunes. iTunes actually matters more now than it ever did before because Apple has basically redone their iTunes website. So you can actually listen to the show directly when someone finds it on Google. They can listen to it directly from the page now, which is actually, I think, a huge help. Leave a review on iTunes. It's been a while since we got a review. We have a nice hearty amount of reviews, written reviews, but it's been a while since someone wrote a review for the show. So if you can write a review and you haven't already, I would really appreciate that. That would be swell. Also, subscribe to this YouTube channel, youtube.com/MattBinder. Also, you can get there easy by just going to doomed.tv. And the audio podcast, by the way, is at doomedpod.com. And folks, I am now going to the Patreon-only half of the show. If you're watching on YouTube, you can stick around. If not, become a Patreon subscriber if you want to hear this part of the show. See you all next time on Doomed. I held that out rather long. And I'll burn, 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 like to die.